Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Okay. Hello, Adnan. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for joining to the Humans in AI podcast. This is hosted by AI Frontier Network and by me, Flor. So yeah, as I said, you've done a lot of things with AI. For everything I read about you, you worn many hats. Like, you are engineer, but as well, educator, mentor, architect. So what is the first thing that, why you were so curious to get into then AI and machine learning as well? Because now everything's about AI. It's kind of, I'm curious about what was the first thing that make you think, oh yeah, I would like to get into this world of AI machine learning.
I don't think it was one aha moment. I've been interested in machines for my whole life. I got my first Commodore when I was 8 years old and started working on this. And I would like to say that I've been working on AI and Gen AI before it was cool. I got my PhD in 2014, which means I started working on it in about 6 years before that. So I've been working on this area before it got the limelight. So it gave me the growing pains associated with AI. But going back to your original question of what brought me to artificial intelligence, I was a chief head architect for a large financial institution. And in finance, when you're working with large transactions and data, there's a lot of fraud detection and algorithmic patterns you need to realize, like what algorithms are running behind the scenes to detect the chaotic data, deal with that data, materialize from that data, understand what the data does, and analysis of that data. So all of that really happens. Understanding those, building recommendation engines on top of it, building fraud detection systems on top of it, it was very evident that the current technology we had, which is rule-based systems, is not good enough. It predicts the user behavior in a way that it's predictable, but if a new rules comes in and the pattern changes to a normal degree or to a surprising degree, you don't really get that results. So for instance, if a fraudulent person is doing a different kind of fraud, you don't really understand it. At that point, I start experimenting with artificial intelligence-based systems, and you can see that it can predict user behavior in a surprising degree to an accuracy, which was really captivating. It was not just elegant code, but it was beginning to decode this hidden layer of human intent and preference. And that experience really solidified my conviction that machine learning is not as much about creating artificial minds or sci-fi or Terminator, but rather it's more about creating these powerful tools which can really amplify human understanding. That's what I would think is an aha moment or one of the key takeaways I had to understand how we can apply this. But what really got me going, and my dissertation was about explainable AI, what really got me going is like the training data, if it is skewed, and the objective function, what object you are trying to get, and this is a big area called alignment problem, it's not well defined, then you have to have guardrails, you have to have bias detection mechanisms, you have to have transparency. And I talk about that in one of my books, is that otherwise the algorithm doesn't really have the human input in it, so it becomes biased and it can become toxic and it can have ethical ramifications. And that really got me sucked into, like, how can I make these algorithms explainable? How can I make them interpretable? How can I bring transparency to this world? And that's has been keeping me going since then.
Wow, that's very interesting. But since we are humans in AI podcast, I would like to focus right now on this part where, so my question here is like, what was the pivot moment where you realized that the real world impact of AI could have on human lives?
Yeah, so real world impact on human lives, I think the evolution you saw happening over time. So how AI is now seeped into our everyday life. And this was not a one moment. Like on one moment, you didn't get Siri and Alexa and all the different algorithms which are defining our lives, whether it is how people enroll in schools, how their jobs get selected, how they get medical treatment, how it happens on historical data, how they get their credit being analyzed, how they get bank loans. Like, it's just completely whether it's the process in retail or finance or healthcare, to take any industry, it's very much seeped in there. And that's where you can see the real world impact coming through. Anywhere where I saw an inefficiency due to a human process, you will realize that no, this is something which is very ripe for automation. And those are the real world impacts I've seen. Now they are very magnified and people are very much attuned to how it is happening. But an unexamined feature, a biased historical data, all of this is a part of this ecosystem. And that's the real world impact. So, for instance, there's a very famous algorithm out there for paroles. And that algorithm is used by law enforcement to give parole to individuals. That has a real world impact on who gets to get out and who doesn't. And if that algorithm has an unexamined feature, it has a biased historical data, what it end up doing is perpetuate the real world inequity. And that inequity is really bad, right? Because it can deny someone crucial follow-up healthcare, or it can allocate resources unfairly, or it's essentially a human profound shock. And we definitely don't want to do that. And those are the things: fairness, equity, justice, bias mitigation, or AI harms are really the real world impact. And last thing I want to say is that now agentic AI is all the craze. Everybody wants to talk about agentic AI. And agentic AI, essentially, the agency is what humans have. So when you talk about humans, we talk about agency and we talk about how humans have agency. But now with agentic AI, with autonomous systems, if they are operating on flawed logic, and they are making decisions which can cause real world damage to individuals and communities, that could be a really big problem in real world humans, which can cause real world impact on human lives.
Actually, that's a very kind of good point because there's been a lot of work, you know, like with all the AI agents in the agentic AI, as you said, like it's well everywhere. What do you think about that? Like it's really gonna change the human lives for the better, or you think it's just complementary thing in our lives more than something that's gonna transform our lives? What do you think about that?
I think the technology is here to transform us, and we have seen over the time that it has transformed our lives in multiple different ways over the ages. It's a very cliche, but people like to talk about the technological revolution over the years, whether it is with agriculture, whether it is manufacturing age, or whether it's industrial age, and now the AI or internet age, and after now we have cognitive age. So every time we have interacted with technology, and now that we have made silicon ability to think, silicon as in the chips able to think, is definitely ha will have a is already having a significant impact on us. Now, is it for good or bad? That's for us to decide based on policy, based on how we use these tools and machines, and what kind of power and guardrails we put around these machines. So I was having a very good discussion with Dr. Sanders at MIT. And he has a very interesting and very simplistic view, or it's very deep, but it sounds simplistic view about how machines should operate. And his thing was, there's no such thing as responsible AI. And he was saying that as a moment of pushing the boundaries. It's like responsible AI, essentially, how you're responsibly using artificial intelligence within your specific use case. So, for example, if you're training corpus, corpus is just a fancy word for data, is biased, is toxic, it's had issues. And you try to build with a system without a fallback, without a bias audit, without content filtering, without adversarial testing, have no psychological safety built around it, then it's going to become an irresponsible system. And that applies to both good systems and AI systems and non-AI systems. So these things need to be put in place. Now with AI, there is a perpetuity of bias. So it can perpetuate bias as if you embed something in the system, like that could be very challenging. And that's something which needs to be addressed. So a short answer for your question is, I see that as a power of good. I see this as a power which can really change the way we do education. One-on-one personalization of education was never possible. Large-scale modernization of legacy systems was never possible before generative AI. There's a lot of good which can come out of this, which can take us out of the mundane day-to-day processes and make us work on things which are really meaningful, it can really change the way we see healthcare today. We see financial services, how it can help other people. If we move this to robotics, it can really interact with us in a way which is meaningful. It can help people, especially where there is a huge shortage in healthcare systems, where robots can really help. So there's a lot of venues where it's very effective, but at the end of the day, it depends on how we move forward with it, how we use it as a power of good or power of evil.
This was a very complete answer. I actually really like it though. I also think that you are someone who's engaging community groups and mentorship, right? So you as well, you taught at universities and coach students. So how do you see the role of the tech communities in shaping a more ethical and inclusive future for AI, for example?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, mentorship, giving back to the community has always been my priority because there's a lot of people who gave me the edge I needed when I needed it. And giving back to the community for that is really critical. So if you imagine the people who are coming, so the one of the very important questions come up when I'm talking to the new graduates or the people who are still in the school is, do we still need to do coding? Do we still need to learn computer science? Or what field should I go in now that AI is taking over majority of these tasks? And it's a very difficult question to answer. And recently somebody asked this question to Mark Rozanovich at Microsoft and a couple of other people, senior leaders. And the answer was fairly clear that the human capability to think and learn and adopt and reinforce this process is still beyond the reach of machines and in the foreseeable future. So learning computer science, implementing the solutions in a novel manner, the way humans can, is still a valid value proposition, and people should still continue with what they're learning because these systems always need a human input to be able to provide. Now, the situation on the ground looks a little different because of all the different tools coming through and the performance of these tools. But in industry, I see that it does have an impact. So when I'm talking to new mentors, so by the way, I work with the Stanford AI Lab. They have a mentorship program for minorities. There's MIT also has a performance-based program on one of their courses where I'm a deputy for. So I get to talk to a lot of people. Even within my company, we have several programs where we get college graduates and UST trains them and get them up to speed to work with companies. We also do this Step It Up America program for veterans and for minorities, and that actually helps people being up to speed or people from underprivileged communities who come in and become a part of this. And these programs are really important. I think the one message, if anybody listening to this podcast can take away, would be that upskilling and modernizing your stack, modernize it's an ongoing process, and you definitely need to keep doing it as you move forward. And mentorship and learning, the camaraderie you build by that is quite crucial because it's not a one-time act. Mentorship is an ongoing process. The people I've mentored over time still comes to me and ask me questions, and you learn it both ways. You understand their fear and their anxieties and what kind of challenges they are encountering, and then you answer those based on your experience. But at the same time, you also learn from them as to what their vision of the world is. And that really helps you understand what the future of next ongoing workforce is going to be, what work you'll be doing with new generation of people. And I think that's why I really prefer to be a mentor. And I also encourage other people to be a part of this mentorship process.
Yeah, I think that mentorship is a way as well to, apart from teaching, but it's as well learning yourself from them as well, right? Like
Absolutely, yes.
it's both ways. So I'm very interested in that. Do you think that your students taught you something as well about AI? Do you have any kind of idea about how it's gonna be the next generation of AI builders, like the new generation, how strong they are gonna be, or what is their potential, or what do you think?
So you mean as in who would be the next generation of AI builders or
Yeah,
what their
like,
attributes?
do you see a lot of potentials? Like, it's gonna be obviously every time is easier and easier to being a builder and more because of AI. So, how do you think it's gonna transform the next generation of AI builders?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it Definitely merits deeper thinking as to what next generation of AI builders would be. I think the next generation of AI builders are very resourceful. They have a lot of cool tools at their hand, not just cool, but actually workable tools. They will be using AI as their co-pilot, and sometimes they will on purpose let it be a pilot so it can do all the different things, the mundane processes. They will be very, and the next generation of AI developers won't be just people who are classically trained in computer science or machine learning or AI or computer or programming like myself, but they would be actually just people who are trained in other disciplines. They don't have to have the detailed knowledge of computer science to be able to build systems, and that would be really remarkable. That is the process of democratization I'm seeing. English is quickly becoming the programming language of the communication with systems. So you communicate with systems using prompts, which is English language. You don't need to use SQL or C sharp or C++ or Java. You communicate with these systems, not in Python, but in English language. So the second part would be that the communication would become much more simpler and easier for people to respond to. And those developers will be inherently skeptical of black box systems. They will champion responsible AI. They will look for data provenance. They will be aware of where the data is coming from, what kind of data distribution it has, does it represent all the different segments of the society? And I think they will be acutely really aware of generative AI challenges. What are the harms are there? So algorithmic harm, what kind of harm it can provide. So that will make them purpose-driven skeptics. They will demonstrate building fair and beneficial AI where they would not like having black box systems. And I think the fourth thing they would have is they will be very risk conscious. They will be aware of misinformation, bias, toxicity, and what are the potential challenges we may have when we have misaligned agentic systems. So we have agentic systems which have unconstrained reinforcement learning or don't have reinforcement learning as human feedback. So they'll be wary of that. So those will be some of the attributes as we are seeing emerge among the future developers or citizen developers, citizen AI developers and scientists. That's something which is constantly evolving. And last, I think there would be, you can sum them up as there will be responsibility champions. They were the people who are pushing the boundaries away from, pushing the boundaries for responsible AI.
Yeah, talking about responsible AI, everybody's talking about the regulations. In US, it's a bit better. In Europe, the regulations are a bit stronger, for example. But what do you think about the regulations that's going to be in the future for the humans? Do you think that should be ethical or has to be responsible for, or do you think it's going to be a challenge for the humans? Because nowadays, it's pretty challenging to know if we really get the privacy, right? So, do you think that this is gonna
Right.
change, or we should get some regulations or some way that we can live more responsible with AI as humans?
I think US had a setback in terms of regulations and compliance around those. Absolutely. Right now, if you, so regulations are quite important when it comes to a new technology like artificial intelligence without thwarting the innovation part of it. So I'm a big advocate in regulating the use cases and not the technology itself. And the reason for that is because if you restrict saying your model can only be up to 1 trillion parameters, or then you are actually stopping the innovation part of it. You're not really addressing the use case. But if you create a regulation which is risk-based approach, which says, hey, you have a strict obligation to, if you are using a high-risk application or forbidden application, like you cannot do facial profiling for a use case which is not allowed, or you cannot do a biometric profiling of human for hiring. These are will be the forbidden use cases. So you cannot use human DNA to choose who you're going to hire and you are not going to hire. That would be one of the non you can cut it down. So you can create regulations around the applicable use cases, but you shouldn't use those as saying, oh, we are going to restrict the technology by number of flops you can use. Flops is standard for floating point operations, or the size of the parameters you can have in a model, things like that. So that classifies and separates between the risk-based approach versus a capability-based approach. So I'm a proponent for using risk-based approach when it comes to regulations. And I myself and my co-author Heather Dahl, we have written a book about it. called Responsible AI in the Enterprise, where we talk about how these regulations work. So US, like I said earlier, had a setback, as in the Executive Act, which was put in place by President Biden, has been rescinded. But since then, there is a federal mandate came out about responsible AI. So we will see in the US, working for enterprises, working for major companies, is that most of these companies work with European Union, and they have EU AI Act, which is a risk-based approach, which talks about safety and fundamental rights of humans, transparency and explainability, like how to make decision-making process explainable, accountability, who holds the liability, the data governance, the risk management of high impact systems. So having a rigorous assessment and mitigation strategy for your AI applications where you may have a significant societal or individual consequence. And it also talks about addressing specific AI challenges, such as like copyright or misinformation or synthetic media and things like that. So EU AI Act is fairly comprehensive. I think this is the best piece of regulation we have right now available. And that is going to drive, and most experts think that is going to happen, is going to drive when the US comes up with a comprehensive AI policy. But one of the challenges with or opportunities with the US AI policy would be that it would be pro innovation. And that's what people have been pushing for, because there was a bill in California which was to restrict the training of future models, and it was shot down because the industry campaigned against it and talked about it and said this is not really something which we should support as a industry, because we believe in a free innovation, be able to innovate things. Of course, having transparency, data governance, and the guardrails in place, as you can see in most modern large models, have some form, shape, or form of that available, but that should be there. Having said that, it's not all doom and gloom, right? We have NIST have AI risk framework, which is available and published. Now, they are frameworks and guidances, so they are not legally enforceable, but they are out there for the companies who are interested in implementing this can actually start using that. So those are the key areas where you can see this is happening and being applicable as part of the how AI is being shaped in the United States. But EU AI Act would definitely have a huge impact on this.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I can see that. So I think everybody's talking about that right now, actually. Okay, so let's talk more about your experiences, like in more, because we know that you work actually from Green Dot, then you've been in another company, then you've been Microsoft, now you are an AI architect in USC. So would you mind sharing a personal story where a challenge in one of those projects taught you something that you never forgot and really, well, it actually takes you where you are right now, but not just focusing on in AI and this, but more about yourself as a leader, as a yourself, like a more personal,
A more human experience of this.
yes, exactly, like something that really taught you through the journey that take you where you are today. Like I think that today you are here thanks to what you did in your past, your experiences. So yeah, would you mind sharing one personal story about that, like what really changed you or transformed you to be who you are now?
No, this is a great question. I think it lets a lot of thinking. There is, of course, the journey you take shapes you over time. By the way, I am not an employee of Microsoft. I'm a Microsoft Regional Director, which is a honorary title given to the people who work in the research and development and business of artificial intelligence or other areas. So Microsoft give this title. It's an honorary award given to the people, and you have to, it gets renewed every 4 years. And Microsoft thinks that you are still working in the industry in the same capability. Every 2 years, it renews it. So I've gotten it a few times, and I still hold it, being a Microsoft Regional Director, even though it sounds like it's an employee of Microsoft, but it's an award. It's an award granted by Microsoft. So if you go to the Microsoft website, you can see me listed as Microsoft Regional Director, but regional directors are not necessarily employees of Microsoft. We do talk to product groups and other people, and then tell them insights into what Microsoft, how customers are using Microsoft products, and Microsoft gives us view into their product landscape. So that's what the Microsoft Regional Director is. So going back to your original question, I think it happens over time. I have had a good luck of having a lot of good mentors over time, And there were several stark eye openers as you learn from your own mistakes. And I had good mentors who I actually go through and then help me moving forward. And then as I work with more and more diverse cultures and diverse people, one of the things I've learned over time is that diversity is quite important. You don't want in an echo chamber of everybody just being the same and just echoing what you are thinking, but having the diversity of opinion is quite important. So that's something has been guiding principles that I try to make my circle of people around me, or the people I work with, or the people who I'm using as my internal board of directors, or who are helping me to go where I want to go, are diverse and different voices. And they have different, maybe I don't agree with them all the time, and that's okay. But having that diversity is important, whether it's teams, whether it's my own product management group. Having diversity is quite important. One transformative experience comes to mind is my education at Harvard Business School. So at Harvard, I had a chance to study with about 160 plus 170 fellow students who were from a diverse background. Like they were high-ranking executives from all over the world. They were people who were running companies or being an important part of companies. And they were all coming from different backgrounds, different nationalities, different genders, there's a huge diversity in that classroom. And the talk taught me a lot about how you can learn from other people's experiences. And the path for success is not a singular one. It is different based on their own journey and their experience, and how they come out of it shows how they have been able to work against all the different defined odds. And that has been a very transformative experience. My class fellows included generals from military. I included people who were CEOs of large airlines, who were management executives from various different places, financial accountants, CFOs. Some of them actually were athletes. So the Harvard Business School experience is one of the most transformative experience I would imagine so far. And that taught me a lot about myself and about the world. I see it.
Thank you very much for sharing. I know that was not like a typical question, but I think that, yeah, I wanted to, I think it's beautiful. I feel like all journeys, basically life experience journey, it's something very beautiful and it's not easy, right? But there's so many lessons that sometimes we don't even realize until we look back and we really kind of think about it. So that's why I wanted to kind of ask you that. I think it's a very interesting and so also for the audience, I think it's important. Yeah, like they also can learn from that and realize. I remember that now. Because as well, there's something that I really believe. There's always one thing, one person, one context, one situation, or something that it really changed your life. Just one thing. Like it doesn't have to be a lot of stuff, but one thing comes with another thing and comes with another thing. So, asking this, what is the one person or one mentor in your life or one? You said that being in hard work was the kind of the biggest thing, but there's one person in particular that really helped you the most to become the person that you are today. Like obviously you did the job, but someone helped you or guide you, let's say.
It's going to be actually a disservice if I just point to one specific person, because it's like your teachers throughout the life, the people who trusted you or even challenged you. Yeah, it's not always the person who says you are going to do great. It's always the people who are going to also say that you're not going to do great. And then they take that as a challenge, and you try to prove them wrong one way or another. And then you realize that the way they said it is because they wanted to challenge you to do better. But I guess one person would be my first manager when I came to US. His name is David Gallet. He is one of the best mentors I've ever had. And I was new to the country. I started learning about the ways of the world here. And he really walked me through the processes. We are still friends. He's retired now. But he really took me under his wing, walked me through the processes, walked me through the way the work happens in a large enterprise. And essentially grow me through the ranks. And it was not always a great job, et cetera. It was a very much a balance of criticality as well as about the appreciation. And I think that's really important quality in a mentor, that they identify the issues you have and then help you move forward with it. But there has been many individuals through my life. I've been lucky and blessed to have all these different individuals who have helped me throughout my process and be able to get where I am. So it's I won't be able to point to one individual specifically, but David has been a very major part of this whole life journey I've had.
Wow, that's beautiful. Let's start to close, but I would like to ask you a few more questions about the future of AI, basically. Like, for example, there's so many things happening. Everything is changing so fast. So, what is a hope you had for the future of AI? And what's one human quality you hope we never lose? Because we are becoming more and more technological and AI society. So I think that's also important to think about that maybe there's some qualities as humans we.
Yeah, I think that's a very all-encompassing question, Floor, to think about what the boldest hope you would have. I think my boldest hope is that AI matures into a collaborative intelligence instead of what we are thinking about it as a master subordinate relationship. It becomes a truly a collaborative intelligence experience where it helps us augment human capabilities and tackle our most intractable global challenges, like the SDG list we have, like climate action, disease, resource scarcity, things like that. It can help us address the SDGs. I actually give a talk about SDGs and how they can be SGDs, I'm sorry, not SDG, SGDs, the Social Global Development Goals. How can you address those as part of using digital transformation and artificial intelligence? I personally envision artificial intelligence as like a tireless research assistant or a simulation engine for complex systems and a personalized tutor for helping us for lifelong learning, which is built firmly on principles of responsible AI and explainable AI, which works in a variety of scenarios in all different industries. And the human quality, which I hope we never cease to lose, is never allow the efficiency of algorithm decision making because it's efficient to empathy. So we want to keep our empathy. Empathy is a quality which humans have and machines don't. Like machines can be programmed to not have empathy, a genuine empathy, as I'm sure there is no benchmark out there for empathy. At least as of not of now, I'm sure somebody who's listening might want to feel challenged to create one, an empathy benchmark for, like we have software engineering benchmarks and other benchmarks. But the ability to understand and share the feelings of other, one another in humans, and to act and with compassion, even when our data is going to suggest this is a colder and more optimal path, and alignment is against that. But if we have empathy in there as an essence of our humanity, we can view. I would never want to lose that to a machine. Like machines can calculate, they can predict, they can optimize, but empathy must remain our unwavering human heuristic. Like that is the thing you should guide the purpose and application of every intelligent system, every AI systems we create. And that I think is the takeaway message, that that's one of the things I would not want to concede to, because if you imagine we have lost our limbs to the industrial revolution, to the mechanical revolution, agricultural skills, we have lost that too. Cognitive skills is possibly what's going to happen now with the AI revolution, but I think the human empathy and qualia, those are the capabilities we still hold, and I would hold dear to them.
That's a very interesting point, actually. I've never heard that. So empathy. That's very nice. It's true. I agree with that. Okay. So Adnan, would you like to share anything else, or would you like to, yeah, you would like to say anything else that you would like to talk about?
I think we have discussed a lot of things, Thor. One last
Yeah.
thing is, this is a world where you are entering, the people who are listening to the podcast, whether you are a student or an engineer or a scientist or an executive or a C-suite person, the world, the only change is the change is the only constant. You are seeing everything change every day, especially with the AI-driven world. And you will see this happening. This is speed up. This transformation will speed up, and it impacts all of our lives. So we cannot really be indifferent about it. We have to participate in it actively, in one way or another, especially for business stakeholders, and the people who are running organizations have to be a part of this revolution and drive it. You have to drive this within your organization or within your sphere of influence, wherever you're working, you are driving it. And when you're driving it, think about responsible AI, explainable AI. Think about the human factor of how it is going to impact humans around you, whether it is job displacement, whether it is ethical AI, whether it's people getting impacted by the decisions made by artificial intelligence, whether it's in jobs or education or healthcare, how does it impact humans? So that humans should be your pivotal point to think about. That should be the crux of how you make decisions around building AI systems. And what will be the impact on that would be to, for you to drive. So that's what I would leave our audience with. And for students who are coming down the bike, who are learning about these systems, they will become a part of your everyday process. Whether you become a doctor or a scientist or an engineer or a physicist or a philosopher, whatever you become, that these are the these machines or these systems, these large language models or the new models we will see, will become a everyday part of your life. And that's just going to happen. That's not so, there's nothing is stopping this train. And that's something which you should become comfortable with and try to build with AI and not against AI.
100% agree. Like, co-create, right?
That's
Great.
right, co-create.
Yeah, Anna, thank you very much for joining to this interview. It's been a great time, and thank you very much for sharing some personal things as well. So yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your time, Flor, and looking forward to having another conversation with you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.